This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today with a difficult subject, a painful one for many people, the release of some of the recordings of the 911 calls that teachers and others made from inside the Sandy Hook Elementary School during the deadly school shooting last year in Newtown, Connecticut. The calls were placed to local police dispatchers after Adam Lanza began his shooting rampage that would kill 20 first graders and 6 school staff members.
Prosecutors and the families of the Sandy Hook victims tried to block the release of the tapes, but a state judge dismissed those arguments last week and the tapes were released just about an hour ago. In this excerpt, we can hear custodian Rick Thorne, who arrived at the school just after the shooting began.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
Sandy Hook Elementary School, 12 Dickinson Drive.
Okay, I've got that. What's going on down there?
I believe there's shooting at the front glass. Something's
okay.
Going on.
All right, I want you to stay on the line.
Rick Thorne survived the shooting. In other calls, you can hear teachers calling dispatchers who calmly tell them to stay away from windows and lock the doors. On at least one of the calls, you can hear gunshots. Joining us now is Colin McEnroe. He's a columnist for the Hartford Current and host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR in Hartford. And Colin, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Anthony.
Help us out here. Back up a little bit and go over the legal fight to release these tapes. Prosecutors and victims' families didn't want them released. Walk us through what happened here.
Basically, what happened, AP was the entity seeking the tapes, and initially it was sort of dealt with kind of passively. AP asked, and Newtown didn't really answer. Ultimately, it went before the State Freedom of Information Commission, which ruled that the tapes should be released. At this point, one of the state's attorneys, Stephen Sedensky, kind of took over and fought it in court as well, and as you said, just about a week ago, was turned down, using a series of arguments which the court at times dismissed as frivolous and you know, using other language like you've barely even begun to make a case for what you're saying.
Mm. We reached out to a group of Sandy Hook families today. We didn't hear back from them, but we do know that their position was opposed to releasing these tapes. They say they want to focus on preventing gun violence in the future. You know, given what they've been through, one can understand their point of view. But what's the best case in favor of releasing these tapes?
I think the best case, Anthony, is we don't know what it is we need to know or want to know until we hear it or see it. Now, similar to a lot of people, as I listen to these tapes, I don't really see anything or don't hear anything that substantially enlarges my understanding of this case. But there's no way to know that unless you can actually hear the tapes. And that's been the problem all along. And it's compounded itself. I mean, the reluctance to release the tapes to news-gathering entities has created an appetite for the tapes that didn't exist otherwise. I mean, I can guarantee you that today many, many more people will listen to these audio tapes than would have listened to them if they'd been made readily available. I mean, they're harrowing to listen to, and they absolutely bring back memories from almost a year ago that most of us don't want brought back. But there's nothing in them that would make them required listening, as far as I can tell, so far anyway. But that fight over them created a sense that they must be worth listening to.
Mm, interesting. Well, tell me a little bit more about what you heard in these tapes. We listened here. For the most part, people sound, I don't want to say calm, but relatively calm relative to the horrendous events that were unfolding. I'm wondering what stood out to you.
Yeah, I think that's the overwhelming sense. Certainly, Rick Thorne, this acting head custodian, is the person that you hear the most. He seems relatively calm, given the unknowable situation he's in. He knows something very bad is happening. He doesn't know exactly how bad it is. I don't think anybody has grasped how bad it is. You hear dispatchers also. The dispatcher who talks to Rick Thorne the most is doing a really good job at gathering information, staying calm, sticking to the facts, getting as much information, and trying to make sure that the people that he and the other dispatchers talk to don't put themselves in more danger. But yeah, if you were expecting to hear hysterical screaming or things that sounded like, you know, some kind of war zone, that's not really what you hear in the tapes. You hear people trying to manage a situation that's, you know, way, way out of their expectations.
Yeah. Now, the Associated Press and other news outlets have filed another Freedom of Information Act request to get the cell phone calls from that day released. Is there a sense of what questions we still need answered, what questions that these calls might help us understand?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know exactly what they're thinking is in filing that request. I guess that what I would say is that this has been sort of a multi-pronged problem. Since this incident, we've had a lot of issues about getting information, getting basic kinds of information. It took an incredibly long time to get the basic state report on this. We still don't really have the state police report. Instead, we have, in lieu of that, a temporary summation of the police report issued by the state's attorney. It doesn't really have in it a lot of things that a person who felt they needed more information about this might want to have. Meanwhile, there's been a battle not only over these 911 calls, but a last-minute and really last-minute piece of legislation passed by the General Assembly here in Connecticut with no public hearing, no public input whatsoever, that ruled out of bounds for the freedom of information law all homicide photos. I mean, it's all triggered by Newtown. It's all because of Newtown, but they couldn't make that special exception. So they basically said that all homicide photos will be off limits to FOI. And then added to that, because they were doing it so precipitously, the formation of sort of a blue ribbon panel, a task force that now meets occasionally to discuss whether or not that was a good thing to do. So I think what's happened is that there's quite a bit of push and pull going on between the press and various entities of the state. And, you know, ultimately what you want to do is get enough of this information out so that people don't feel as though something important has been withheld.
Mm. Colin McEnroe, he's a columnist for the Hartford Courant and host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR in Hartford. Colin, as always, many thanks.
You're welcome, Anthony.
And listeners, there's more information about this story, including a link to the recordings of those tapes that the police released today at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.